Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to eBible Fellowship's question and answer this evening on Skype. Allow me to read some of the information for someone listening on Pal Talk or maybe some other way. If you would like to call in and ask a question or make a comment, if you're calling on the phone, dial 1-209-647-1600. 1-209-647-1600. And enter the access code 181610, followed by the pound key to enter into the conference. Or if you're on Skype, call the free conference call HD.1600 Skype user and enter the access code 181610. To get in line to ask a question, press *6 and then 1. When it's your turn to ask a question, you will hear, you may now ask your question. If you'd like to ask a question on Pal Talk, please raise your hand and wait until called upon to post your question. Okay, well, I hope that everyone was able to get that. And now at this time, we are going to open up the room to any questions or, again, comments that anyone might have. And everyone is invited to share whatever on your mind by raising your hand. All right, let's go to the first call tonight. Please, go ahead with your call.
Hi, Brother McCann. I have a question concerning the year 2011. On the Gregorian calendar, it's 2012. But on the biblical calendar, are we still in 2011, or is there any correlation there? Do you know?
Well, no, we are in the year 2012. But we have to remember that the key date for us was 7,000 years from the flood, and the 7,000th year locked into May 21 of 2011. But again, that was the 17th day of the second Hebrew month, and we are still in that 7,000th year. That will not expire until the Hebrew year will expire in March, but that year, the 7,000th year, will not expire until May. And the other thing to remember is that we are in the 13,000th and 23rd year since creation. And we're moving towards 13,024. We don't exactly know when the world was created, but in all likelihood, we have not arrived at that yet. And there is information in the Bible where God speaks of the fullness of a date. Let me read this from 1 Kings chapter 6. It says in verses 37 and 38 of 1 Kings 6, in the fourth year was the foundation of the house of Jehovah laid in the month Ziph. Now Ziph was the second month. And in the 11th year, in the month Bull, which is the eighth month, was the house finished throughout the parts thereof, according to all the fashion of it. So was he 7 years in building it. But when we look at the timeline God gave, it began in the fourth year, second month, and it was completed in the 11th year, eighth month, and that's 7 years and 6 months. Yet God refers to just 7 years for the length of time it was built. And there's a couple other examples in the Bible, too. So in other words, God could say the world, let's say judgment comes in March, is destroyed in its 7,000th year, because we have not reached the year 7,001 yet from the flood.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for that question. Let's go to our next caller. Good evening, and welcome to eBibles Question and Answer.
Our first question from Pal Talk tonight comes from Sherv1. Could you compare Esther chapter 6, verse 1, with Revelation chapter 20, verse 15? In Esther 6, verse 1, do you think that this is a picture of God opening the book of life? If so, so the next day is May 21 when Haman is hanged.
Esther 6, verse 1, on that night could not the king sleep, and he commanded to bring the book of records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. And it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthan and Teresh. And now notice that Haman is already in the outer court at the time the king is reading these chronicles, and it's discovered that these two rebels who were turned in by Mordecai, it's discovered that nothing was done for Mordecai, no honor was bestowed upon him. So in all probability, it was very early in the morning on that day, the 17th day of the second month. Now, you want to compare that with Revelation 20 in verse 15. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. Well, this reference to the book of life is not really, in a sense, I suppose it could, but the book of life has to do with mankind, and those all men at the very beginning of creation, in one sense, were written in a book, had their names written, but due to sin, they were blotted out. But God had another book, and in that book, all the elect's names were written, all those that he saved from before the foundation of the world. Satan would be in neither of those, so it's not really referring to him. And the emphasis in Esther 6:1 is on the judgment of Satan on Judgment Day of May 21. And the book, let's look at Daniel 7, Daniel chapter 7. And see how this ties in. Verse 9, the Ancient of Days did sit. And it says in verse 10, the last part of the verse, the judgment was set and the books were open. I beheld them because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake. I beheld even till the beast was slain and his body destroyed. There may be some sort of tie-in. This, I'm not really sure. I haven't thought about the books being open in relationship to Satan, and how that might apply to him. We do know that Judgment Day is in view in both chapters, Revelation 20 and Esther 6:1. But thank you for bringing that up. I think it's something to think about and look into more. Thank you. And let's go to our next person. Please go ahead with your call.
Oh, yes. Good evening, Chris. I love your study. Could you look at compare Acts 17:31 with Daniel 8:19 and those two with Esther chapter 9, 27th verse and 31st verse? And in regards to the term time appointed, and mentioned also in Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 3.
Let me test my memory here. Okay, I did get Acts 17:31.
Right.
Because
and then,
he has appointed a day in which he will judge the world. And then you wanted to Daniel 8:29?
I'm sorry, 8:19.
8:19, and he said, "Behold, I will make thee know what shall be in the last end of the indignation, for at the time appointed the end shall be." And then Esther 9?
9:27 or 31.
Okay, the Jews ordained and took upon them and upon their seed and upon all such as joined themselves unto them, so as it should not fail, that they would keep these 2 days according to their writing and according to their appointed time every year. And verse 31, to confirm these days of Purim in their times appointed. And what's your question?
Well, I just thought that your study tied a lot of Daniel, the 12th chapter with the 13th verse, with Esther 9, and I saw a lot of the time appointed being mentioned in those three references, and I just thought it's not so random. Like, you know, you start to see a pattern with certain things, and maybe this is all pointing to the same direction as you're saying, suggesting. I also wanted you to look at, if you would, a caller or someone there had a question a few weeks ago regarding Revelation chapter 10, verse 11, and also verse 2, I believe, where the angel says, "Take the little book," and I'm wondering if the little book might mean the book of Esther, not the entire Bible, but just the little book, and then you must prophesy again to nations and tongues and so forth, whether that could mean like the second letter in Esther that went out to all the 127 provinces. Maybe that's the prophecy is to the believers that Purim may be the last day. And just wondered what you thought of that. I think someone else asked that question, though. But at the time, you weren't looking at it. It was kind of early in the studies, I think. So.
Well, the appointed day of Purim, I think, would tie in with the other verses that speak of the appointed day of the end. The language that that God uses to describe the Feast of Purim can only fit Judgment Day, when the Jews are able to slay their enemies, and when that is sanctioned by God and allowed and encouraged, that all of that language points to the last day. There's no other time that God would permit his people to take vengeance. And even on the last day, you know, of course, we're not going to literally be harming our enemies ourselves. God will do that. But in his action of taking his people out of the world and destroying the earth, it would include the destruction of all of the enemies of his kingdom and of his people. And like for instance, when we look at the Feast of Purim and we look at this language that we find in Esther 9:22, as the days wherein the Jews rested from their enemies, and the month which was turned unto them from sorrow to joy, and from mourning into a good day, that they should make them days of feasting and joy, and of sending portions one to another, and gifts to the poor. Now let's compare that with Isaiah 51 and verse 10 and 11. Art thou not it which has dried the sea, the waters of the great deep, that has made the depths of the sea a way for the ransom to pass over? Therefore the redeemed of Jehovah shall return and come with singing unto Zion, and everlasting joy shall be upon their head. They shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and mourning shall flee away. And that's everlasting joy. That is picturing entering into the new heaven and new earth. And it's the very same language that we have associated with the Feast of Purim, when that feast or that day is turned from sorrow and mourning to joy, and so too at the end of the world. The question about Revelation 10, I don't think that Esther is in view by the little book. It's just out of character. We don't have that type of link anywhere else in the Bible that I can think of where God is referring to a particular book of the Bible. He refers to the Bible, but not to a particular book. When we're looking at Revelation 10, we have to look at, in comparison, Ezekiel. In Ezekiel chapter 2 and chapter 3, in Ezekiel 3, verse 1, "Moreover, he said unto me, Son of man, eat that thou findest, eat this roll, and go speak unto the house of Israel. So I opened my mouth, and he caused me to eat that roll. And he said unto me, Son of man, cause thy belly to eat, and fill thy bowels with this roll that I give thee. Then did I eat it, and it was in my mouth as honey for sweetness." And that language is very close to what we're reading in Revelation 10, where it said, eat the little book, and it was bitter yet sweet. And so I think that Ezekiel would be something we could look to find information about Revelation 10. And at this point, I don't understand exactly what's in view with that chapter. But thank you for bringing up those verses and your comments. And let's go to the next person, please. Welcome to our question and answer time. Please go ahead with your call.
Hello?
Yes, hello. We can hear you. Go ahead.
Hi, Chris. Thank you very much for taking my call. My question tonight is about the book of Jonah. I have some friends of mine that we're studying the book of Jonah, and I'm getting a little confused because they're comparing it to what happened May 21 and October 21 and the spiritual judgment day, and they're also kind of coming to a conclusion that I think it's in Jonah 3, it might be verse 4, where God tells Jonah to tell the people of Nineveh that in 40 days they will be overthrown. They're saying that this word overthrown is meaning to make a change, but not to necessarily physically destroy or where Nineveh would be no more. And I'm actually right now looking up the word in the Concordance, Strong's, and I'm also looking in the Young's Concordance. And I guess to make this short, have you kind of studied that book, and do you feel that when God is saying that they will be overthrown, that he is meaning, or he could be meaning, that he is bringing about a change? I also have another question for that book, if you want to answer that one first.
Yeah, well, the answer to that question is that when God has Jonah preach at 40 days and Nineveh will be overthrown, it means to be destroyed. It's not a change. It's the same word that's found in Genesis 19 in verse 25, and he overthrew those cities and all the plain and all the inhabitants of the cities, referring to Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities of the plain. And we know they were destroyed by fire and brimstone, and yet God says they were overthrown. So when Jonah went into the city and cried out, yet 40 days and Nineveh will be overthrown, he meant, and this is what God told him, that in 40 days Nineveh would be destroyed. And that's how the people of Nineveh received it, that their city and they themselves would be destroyed within that time. And as a result of hearing that, they cried out mightily to God, and we know that God spared the city. But no, there was no other. I don't know what other people have in mind by something else in view with overthrown. We can be sure that we've correctly understood it means the city would be destroyed.
Okay, thank you so much. And just one other quick question. They're also kind of saying that God does not, you know how God said that he does not change. He's the same today, tomorrow, yesterday. They're also saying that God
repented.
Yeah, when he repented, he doesn't change. So they're saying, you know, like, I'm just a little confused by it all, to be honest.
Yeah.
Doesn't God have a right to change? It seems like there's many times in the Bible where he has did something and then he changed his mind.
Well, I think it would help when we realize the word repent means to turn. Like where it says in Jonah 3:10, and God saw their works, that they turned from their evil way, and God repented of the evil that he had said that he would do unto them, and he did it not. Like, for instance, when an individual repents from sin, he turns away from sin. And here God had the evil, which would be his wrath, his judgment, he intended to bring it upon Nineveh. It was the target or the object of his wrath, and yet he repented of that evil, or he turned the evil away from Nineveh. Now, this is where Jonah comes hit spiritually. When we look at the Hebrew in chapter 4 in verse 1, Jonah 4, verse 1, if you look at the Hebrew and look at Jay Green's Interlinear Bible, you're going to find some very different wording than we have in our King James. I don't have my Interlinear with me, but from what I remember, it says it was a great evil to Jonah's eye. And in the English, it says, but it displeased Jonah exceedingly, and he was very angry. But the previous chapter and the previous verse, the last verse of chapter 3, God repented of the evil, that is, he turned it. But where did it go? You know, God can't just forgive sin by the wave of a hand. His wrath upon sin must go somewhere. If he's going to forgive these people that he has elected to salvation, then that wrath that was going to be poured out on them must go to Christ. And Jonah is a picture of that in chapter 4, verse 1. It was a great evil, the same word, God repented of the evil, to Jonah's eye. And remember the verse in the New Testament, if thine eye be evil, then you're full of darkness. And so it's a figure that Jonah took upon him the sin of these individuals in Nineveh who typify the elect. And that's why in verse 2 of Jonah 4, it goes on to say, and this is referring to Jonah, and he prayed unto Jehovah and said, I pray thee, O Jehovah, was not this my saying when I was yet in my country? Therefore I fled before unto Tarshish, for I knew that thou art a gracious God and merciful, slow to anger and of great kindness, and repentest thee of the evil. Therefore now, O Jehovah, take, I beseech thee, my life for me, for it is better for me to die than to live. So the spiritual picture is that the sins of these individuals who God is sparing are laid on Jonah, who's a type of Christ, and then he is saying it is better for me to die than to live. And he's beseeching the Lord to take his life. And that's a picture of Christ paying for the sins of his elect.
Actually, these sins would have been laying on Jesus Christ, yes?
Well, yeah, we do know that many people in Nineveh were truly saved, because Jesus tells us in Matthew that the men of Nineveh shall rise in the judgment. And so that indicates that God did do a work of salvation, a big work of salvation in the city of Nineveh.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Okay.
Thank you for that.
Okay, thank you for your question. Let's go to our next caller. Welcome to eBible's question and answer.
Next question from PalTalk comes from R. Conter. Is there anything in the book of Esther that refers to October 21, 2011?
Well, there is a reference when we go to Esther chapter 2, verse 7, and it says, and he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter. It's referring Mordecai raised Esther. He adopted her, and Esther is a picture of the believers. And her Hebrew name was Hadassah. Her Persian name was Esther. And we find, you know, that the case in as we read about many individuals in the post captivity period, or even during the Babylonian exile, that they had either a Babylonian name or a Persian name. They were given this by their captors, and so Esther, that name was Persian, and Hadassah is Hebrew. Hadassah means myrtle tree. This word Hadassah in the masculine form is translated as myrtle tree six times, and three times in Zechariah chapter 1. In Zechariah 1, there's an interesting account of a vision given of a man riding a red horse, and then he stood among the myrtle trees, and the word myrtle tree is the masculine form of Hadassah, Hadass. And what's significant about this is the date in Zechariah 1:7, upon the 24th day of the 11th month, which is the month Sebat in the second year of Darius. So that's 11:24. But if we go to the previous book, Haggai, in chapter 1, we find an outline of 23 days. It starts with the first day of the sixth month of the second year of Darius, same king, ruling at the same time. Haggai and Zechariah were contemporaries, and Ezra even joins them together, that Zerubbabel and Josiah, the high priest, rose up to build the temple by the prophesying of Haggai and Zechariah. So we know that it's referring to the exact same year of the same king's reign. And Haggai 1:1 starts out with the first day of the sixth month of the second year of Darius, and it ends in verse 15, Haggai 1:15, in the 24th day of the sixth month in the second year of Darius. That's exactly 23 days later. And if you read that chapter, there's language in there that identifies with the Great Tribulation. And so it happens the Great Tribulation lasted 23 years. So we're right away we see a parallel to that. And then when we realize that this ends in the 624, the 24th day of the sixth month of the second year of Darius, and Zechariah 1:7 is the 24th day of the 11th month, we see that's exactly 5 months after a 23-day period. And in other words, it matches up with the 23-year Great Tribulation followed by 5 months. And lo and behold, we find not precisely, because it's not Hadassah, but it's virtually her name, her Hebrew name, Hadass, myrtle tree, three times, and three has to do with the purpose of God. And we are finding now that the book of Esther has everything to do with this period post October 21, where God is opening up information to help us understand what happened on May 21. Now, is there anything specific within the book of Esther that relates to the Feast of Tabernacles? And I don't think so. I haven't been able to see anything that does relate to the Feast of Tabernacles. But thank you for that question. And let's go to the next person. Welcome to eBible Fellowship's question and answer. Please go ahead with your call.
Yeah, your last answer kind of ties in with my question. You know, in Revelation 9:5-10, talks about 5 months of torment. I guess my question is there still snares, fire, and brimstone falling? And would Zechariah 1, the fact that things are at rest after, I guess, in verse 11, talks about all the earth sitteth still and is at rest. I guess my question is there fire and brimstone still falling?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I know what you're asking. And we do have this language that particularly emphasizes an ugly 5 month period that relates to May 21 through October 21. And it's language that does fit the Battle of Armageddon. It's language that fits God doing war against his enemies. However, we also find in verse 12 of Revelation 9, one woe is past, and behold, there come two woes more hereafter. So the one woe would be the 5 months. And now that we've gone beyond, I think we have to understand that there's two other woes that would deal with the remaining amount of time. And at this point, I'm still looking into it. I don't have any real answers.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Thank you for that question. And let's go to our next caller. Welcome to eBible's question and answer.
Our next question on Pal Talk comes from Chris L. 40. In Esther 8, verse 9, excuse me, to Esther 9, verse 1, from the decree going forth, it is 9 months. Does this have to do with the deliverance in Romans chapter 8, verse 22?
Okay, Esther 8, 9 through Esther 9, 1. Well, the decree is given. It says, then were the king's scribes called at that time in the third month, that is the month Sivan, on the 23rd day thereof. So that would be 323. And it's not exactly 9 months, because Adar is the 13th day of the 12th month. So an exact 9 months would be the 23rd day of the 12th month. This falls 10 days short of that. And you wanted to compare that with Romans 9?
Romans chapter 8, verse 22.
For we know that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now. Well, I think you're trying to make some sort of tie-in with a pregnancy, and I'm afraid that's not going to fit. I know it comes close, as some people have pointed out, that 40 weeks or 280 days. And by the way, when we're dealing with pregnancy, we have no exact number because there are variations for some women. There is no exact number. There's also a question of a two-week period in there if the woman's pregnant at all. And so we can't use that. It's not precise enough. We would not be able to come to any real conclusion. And when people have tried to say, well, 9 months from 521 brings us to near the end of February, and that's close to Purim, well, then it has no relationship to Purim because God, it's not horseshoes. You know, close doesn't count. You don't get any points for being close. It has to be exact. It has to be. We've seen that as God has worked out the calendar, and as he locked in May 21 very definitely, and we see a definite tie-in with Haman being slain on the 17th day of the second month. And we would need to see that with any other information, not just something that lands within a close distance. Well, thank you for that question. And let's go to our next question. Welcome once again to eBibles Question and Answer.
Our next question on Pal Talk comes from Grammy Schmalzenheimer. I heard from someone that Family Radio was selling a WFME radio station in the New York area. Is this true?
I haven't heard that. I know they sold one in Maryland. I think it was WYSI. And I think they sold WKDN, but that's still in the air waiting FCC approval. I haven't heard they sold any others, and especially WFME. I think that would be pretty big news. I think for now they're just going to sell the two stations. Thank you for that question. And if anyone else has anything, please just raise your hand and feel free to take the mic or to ask your question or to make your comment. Everyone's welcome to do so. And please, let's go to the next caller.
Psalm 120 asks, was October 21 a spiritual ending? He asks if, regards this, if you could explain Ezekiel chapter 7, verses 2 to 3, and Hebrews 9, verse 26.
Ezekiel 7, 2 and 3. Also thou, Son of man, thus saith the Lord Jehovah unto the land of Israel, in end, the end is come upon the four corners of the land. Now is the end come upon thee, and I will send mine anger upon thee, and will judge thee according to thy ways, and will recompense upon thee all thine abominations. Well, this is referring to the end. Now, was October 21, or what was October 21? I think we can understand some things. That is, remember that the Feast of Tabernacles was held in conjunction or along with the Feast of Ingathering. And the Feast of Ingathering began September 7th in 1994. That was the first day of the seventh month, that brought in the Jubilee year, and God began the latter rain. He was bringing in the harvest, the fruits, and this would be the last fruits, the final feast of his salvation plan. Now, that ingathering period continued all the way through until May 21, 2011. And so at that point, now switch over, in your mind's eye to John chapter 21. And we have the great catch of fish. And there's 153 fish. They're all caught. All the fish are in the net. It's just a matter of process of dragging the net, this great catch of fish, to land to the Lord Jesus Christ. And so I think that has a lot to do spiritually with the 5 months that God saved all of his elect. All the fruit was brought in, and then it was a manner of presenting it to himself by the last day of the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, Amos chapter 9 refers to tabernacles in an interesting way. If we read that, it says in Amos 9, verse 11, "In that day will I raise up the tabernacle of David that is fallen, and close up the breaches thereof, and I will raise up his ruins, and I will build it as in the days of old." Now, we have language in John 6 that on the last day, I will raise him up. It says four times in that chapter. And, I'm really not sure about this. I'm just presenting this as a possibility, or at least something to start with that we can consider, that God saved all of his people. So the breaches of the tabernacle, and look at the tabernacle basically as the house of God, or another figure of speech, the New Jerusalem. It's just language referring to all the believers. And now the tabernacle, each child of God is brought together, and now it must be raised. And so, in a way, perhaps, that was the significance of the Feast of Tabernacles. And then when the tabernacle is raised, God goes in to indwell, in his people. And that, this is a difficult thing, continuing to pray about exactly what God had in mind. Now, we also can know that one purpose for the Feast of Tabernacles was to throw us off course, to misunderstand it now and think it would be the end of the world. Well, why would God do that? In order to set up this final and most severe test or trial of the faith of all of his people. It's really a perfect test to see who is gold, silver, precious stone, and who is wood, hay, stubble. As we see on one hand, now let's look at it from this perspective, where May 21 was Judgment Day, but we had some incorrect ideas about what that meant prior to May 21, but we've since learned it's a spiritual judgment, and the book of Esther confirms that. Then the book of Esther confirms there would be no rapture. The Jews remain in the provinces, no earth-shattering thing, except that Haman dies, and there is a change in power from Haman to Mordecai. And yet, if we had this information prior to May 21, we would just simply say, well, then we go from this date to the Feast of Purim. That is the tie-in to the flood, because Haman dies on the 17th day of the second month. And then we would focus more in the Feast of Purim than on the Feast of Tabernacles. And, you know, it's interesting that I have a friend who asked Mr. Camping just prior to May 21 at a live question and answer, I think, at Oakland, that they have in the studio, and she asked him about Purim. And Mr. Camping said he thought it was a red herring. That is, the language fits the end of the world, but God really had no plan for it as far as the timeline. And actually, now that the Feast of Tabernacles has passed, we can probably reverse that. And we can say, oh, the actual timeline follows Esther. And the Feast of Tabernacles, although it has significance, we do find that five-month period in the Bible. We just don't fully understand it yet. It was not the end of the world. And in that sense, it was the red herring. It was the one that took us a little bit off course as far as our understanding of how the final things will work out. But thank you. And let's go to our next caller. Welcome to eBible Question and Answer.
Our next question comes from Dan Vincent. Can you, actually, he has two questions. The first one is, can you clarify or separate Judgment Day from the absolute last day in Revelation 20, where it talks about those that are not written in the Book of Life that are cast into the lake of fire, which was not May 21 or October 21? Also, are you tentative or certain the rapture and the last day will happen in March of this year?
Well, you know, we can know this about Judgment Day, that we can know May 21 was the completion of the judgment process on the churches. And that is, judgment began at the house of God, and God completed that judgment on that date. He also brought Satan under judgment, he lost all authority in the church and also in the world. And Christ was exalted. He was lifted up and given the house of Haman, or the rule over everything that Satan was ruling over in this world. And we can know those things. We can know that God judged the world because he shut the door of salvation. That's an awful spiritual judgment. And because of that, we can also know that all those that were in the churches, they sadly did not hearken to God at all when he was warning them to get out. And so they their judgment is complete. They're just waiting the final destruction. But those outside of the churches, again, have some hope, and we could have some hope for them, or as an individual, they could have hope that possibly God did some work in them, and so they could cry out for mercy and God might save them. So we have all that information, and then we, from this timeline we're getting from the Bible in the Book of Esther, we would then go to the very last day when all the enemies of the Jews are killed. And that would point to the end of the world. Now, how sure am I? I'm not going to get involved in percentages or absolute statements. All I can say is that this information is coming from the Bible, and it's pretty direct. It's not that hard to see that Haman was killed on the 17th day of the second month. I think it for those who have eyes to see, I mean, that's always the requirement to understand spiritual things. People can see the spiritual context within the book of Esther, that it does identify with the Great Tribulation, and then Haman is killed. And they can also see that Purim, the fulfillment of the Feast of Purim, relates to the end. So all that information is coming from the Bible. And it's a matter to a degree that we trust the Bible. And of course, the question is always, do we understand the Bible fully or correctly? And we have to pray to God for continued wisdom. But right now, it looks pretty straightforward. Well, thank you for that question. And did you have a second question?
The next question from Pal Talk comes from Lindsay 1132. Did you speak with Mr. Camping today? If so, does he believe that we are on the right track with the Esther study?
No, George was going to call Mr. Camping, but we ran long today, and I think everyone's too tired, so we didn't call. Now, as far as the Esther study, some of the earlier studies were printed out in very large size print, and a couple of individuals had them shipped to Mr. Camping, and he did receive them. So I really don't know anything more than that. But thank you for that question, and we have time for one last one. If anyone has anything, please just raise your hand.
Our last question from Pal Talk is from Sure of One. Could the second woe be the second letter of Purim? If you could look at Esther 9, verse 29. Was the first woe May 21, 2011?
Well, the first woe, actually there were four previous woes in Revelation 8, and then three more woes in Revelation 9, and the first of those three identifies with 5 months, because right after the 5 month period, it says the first woe is past. It's very difficult. I wouldn't say we can't, but right now we haven't been able to pinpoint exactly what the second woe identifies with, because from Revelation 9:12, it says the first woe is past, and then the second woe comes, let me read that, make sure I get it right. Revelation 9:12, one woe is past, and behold, there come two woes more hereafter. And then you can read several more verses in Revelation 9, all of Revelation 10, and pretty much more than halfway through Revelation 11, until you get to verse 14 of Revelation 11, and then it says the second woe is past. And behold, the third woe cometh quickly. Now, that's a lot of material. We began reading in Revelation 9, chapter 10, and a large part of Revelation 11, and it dealt with many different things. So where exactly is that second woe? That's something we need to continue to pray for wisdom about. What does that second woe identify with exactly? And again, it just is difficult to pinpoint what it is, what part of all that information it is describing. But thank you for that question. I would like to thank everyone for joining us tonight, and especially for asking your questions or making your comments and bringing up the Bible verses we had an opportunity to read and consider. Lord willing, this coming week, Thursday and Friday, we'll be in this room. We'll open up Pal Talk and Skype, and you can join us by phone at 10 p.m. Eastern Time Thursday night and Friday night, and also, Lord willing, next Sunday. But for now, I'm going to say good night, and may the Lord grant us his wisdom.